from bureaus worldwide. This is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show, approaching 3 minutes past the hour. It is the 8th of January 2020. I'll be monitoring Twitter as usual, so do feel free to have your say. Two terrific guests for the final live show of the week. Lots to talk about as usual, and an interesting news roundup to come in a moment or two. Welcome to your Richie Allen Show. There's nothing like it, is there? I don't think so.
The junkies bastard, yeah. The junkies bastard, yeah.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Robert Inlakesh is a journalist, and he's doing a lot of work for Press TV in London. Robert has been on the programme in the past talking about Palestine. He'll be on today to talk about the Ukrainian airliner which crashed in Tehran the other morning, only a few hours after the Iranian response to the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. The Iranians fired missiles at bases west of Baghdad. What's going on with the plane crash? We'll ask Robert Inlakesh that. We'll also be reflecting on the week that we've just had and where this might all lead. And in the second hour, Max Egan will be live on the programme, live from Australia in the very small hours of the morning there. So much to get into with Max, including, of course, the bushfire situation there and the work that he's been doing on that on his own YouTube channel and on his website, even thecrowhouse.com. Thursday's show, broadcasting live from Salford in Greater Manchester and multiple platforms around the world. Yes, indeedy. You well today? I'm well. Relatively good. It's been a good week back. It's great to be back this week. But, you know, after you come back from a break, you often feel, you feel it, don't you? You feel your first week back. For me, the best time is being on air chatting with you. That's when there's no, you know, everything is calm and cool. But otherwise, you're kind of running around chasing your tail that first week back. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Hey, listen, what I love about this programme is some of you, you don't miss a bloody trick, do you? Do you? Do you? I said. You don't miss a trick. I had a message today from Uncle B. He says, sorry, Rich. You're not sorry at all, you bastard. He says, but the Scottish Cup is the oldest club competition in the world. And he's right. I apologise, mea culpa. I insinuated that the English FA Cup was the oldest club competition in the world, but I was wrong, and I'm the first to admit when I'm wrong. Thank you, Uncle B, for putting me right, you bastard. You. Anyway, good stuff. Yes, how could I forget my Scottish brethren and sistren? Yes, it's been an interesting day today for those of us who observe the media. We've got some breaking news, by the way. We've got some breaking. It's great to be able to break a story. The fallout from the Sussexes leaving the royal family. This is Harry and Meghan. This has taken a very serious turn in the last half an hour. So we've got some breaking news. Massive news this. Yeah, we've got our own jingle and everything. Massive news on the Sussexes who've stepped back from their royal duty, stunning the Queen, apparently. It's over to Sarah Jane Mee from Sky News. What's the latest, Sarah Jane?
Madame Tussauds have cottoned on to this story today. Here's immediate reaction from them. That is the royal family as it is now in Madame Tussauds. They have removed the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. So they.
What was that again, Sarah Jane? What was that about Madame Tussauds?
Madame Tussauds have cottoned on to this story today. Here's immediate reaction from them. That is the royal family as it is now in Madame Tussauds. They have removed the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, so they stand separately from the rest of the royal family. Anybody who's checked out their new website, sussexroyal.com.
Jesus Christ, Madame Tussauds has moved the waxworks of Harry and Meghan away from the rest of the royal family. Holy Jesus. Do you hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Yes. Madame Tussauds have taken Harry and Meghan's waxwork and took it away from the royal family. Massive stuff, this. Just in case you haven't been following this, I bet there's murder between the Sussexes, eh? I bet you there's murders behind the scenes. I bet you Meghan is throwing plates at Harry, screaming at him. You, it's your fault, you little ginger fucker, with your Oedipus complex, Harry. We're out of Madame Tussauds now, and we won't be changing the card this year, eh? Madness. This is the story that Harry Hewitt and his mixed-race actress wife are stepping away from their royal roles. Freeloading bastards. It's all the news today. It's all the news. It's everywhere. There's no escaping it. Even if you're in the US, apparently. US media, full of it. And I know you missed the virtue signalling chart countdown, don't you? I know you missed it. I don't have one today, but I will bring it back real soon. Because it's loads of fun. There was a fantastic bit of virtue signalling this morning. I want you to close your eyes and picture with me a scenario. Because this about sums up what I'm about to describe. Close your eyes, I said. I know you're doing it. Close your eyes. Picture a striker in soccer. Football. The striker wears number 9 or number 10. Sometimes the striker wears number 7. He or she or they or them wanders into the box. And the ball comes across the box in front of the goal. As this happens, the goalkeeper suffers a cardiac arrest. And the defenders haven't run back. You're standing there. The goal is gaping wide open. The keeper is on the ground getting electroshock treatment. You can't miss, right? You can't miss. Well, that was the situation that Nicky Campbell found himself in this morning. BBC Radio 5 Live. When talking about the Royal Actress Bride. Nicky was that striker. Keeper, collapses, cardiac arrest, no defenders, goal wide open. And be Jesus, be jeepers, by God and sonny Jesus, Nicky Campbell wasn't going to miss this opportunity.
Do you remember, though, the excitement? We covered the royal wedding and we were there for in Windsor for the event itself. And we spoke to a lot of young women of colour who said this is a really important and significant moment for this institution. Mm. And this is a new way forward.
Oh, it was immensely moving. There she was in the church at a royal wedding, a woman of colour. I cried. And now, I mean, it wasn't because of the royal occasion or the royal family or my monarchical bent. It was because of that. It was like Obama becoming president.
Well, it did feel like a moment. It genuinely did. And now, effectively, they're saying this hasn't worked out.
Yeah, just in case you missed it. You ready?
Oh, it was immensely moving. There she was in the church at a royal wedding, a woman of colour. I cried.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Be a man. Be a fucking man. Be a man. Stop with this virtue signalling bollocks. Constantly looking for opportunities to signal to your audience that you're a modern man. Be a man. You fucker, you couldn't give a shit about them. What a liar. Next time he goes to Scotland, take his kilt off him and shove it up his arse. Be a man, you big smelly haggis. Be a man. I cried at the royal wedding.
Oh, it was immensely moving. There she was in the church.
A woman of colour.
At a royal wedding. A woman of colour. I cried.
I'd love to punch him in the fucking face. I'd love to be co-presenting with him. You lying bastard. That's your media in 2020. Is it 2020? I think it is. 11 minutes past 5, the Richie Allen Radio Show. Live as usual from Salford and Greater Manchester. Lots to talk about. Barry Gardiner. Do you remember Barry Gardiner? This will make you laugh. Barry Gardiner. Barry Gardiner is the Shadow International Development Secretary. And he has entered the Labour leadership contest. He's entered the competition. Now, Barry Gardiner, in case you don't remember who he is, he always sounds, whenever he speaks, like he has been gargling with somebody else's semen, right? Listen and you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But more than a terrible evening for Labour, I think it's a terrible evening for all those who we wanted to protect with the changes that we put forward in our manifesto. And I'm devastated, of course.
Yeah, yes, he gargles with freshly scoze semen. That's what he does. Anyway, he's going to run for Labour leader. And two female Labour MPs, Louise Haig and some woman called Tonya Antoniazzi. Sounds like a striker for Juventus. Tonya Antoniazzi, but she's a Labour MP. And Louise Haig, they were on Sky with the ginger ninja, Kay Burley. And they are not happy. About Barry Gardiner, who gargles with semen. I have to say that again. Has entered the race because, well, we need a woman, goddammit.
I am, you know, the left have got a perfectly good candidate, a very good candidate in Rebecca Long-Bailey. And I just, you know, we all agree in theory that it needs to be a woman. And then a bloke turns up in a red tie and everyone's like, oh, thank God I don't actually have to vote for a woman in practice. And that's very much what it is.
Is that what people have said? Do you think that people went this morning when they heard that Barry Gardiner had entered the race, Do you think that Labour members around the country went, oh, thank God a guy has entered so that I don't have to vote for a woman?
Red tie. And everyone's like, oh, thank God I don't actually have to vote for a woman in practice. And that's very much what it feels about Barry Gardiner's potential entry into the race, is that we're just, you know, it's 100 years of our party and we have never elected a woman as leader. And I'm ashamed of that. And that's why this time there was absolutely no way I could back a male candidate.
So Jesus Christ could have joined the Labour Party. There's no way I was voting to elect him.
By this time, there was absolutely no way I could
no
back
way.
A male candidate. And we've got so many fantastic female candidates for the job.
Really? Jess Phillips? Rebecca Long Bailey? And who's the other one? Lisa Nandy. Yeah, they're wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be a woman. It has to be a woman. Be somebody and I don't know how Louise feels.
This is Tonya Antoniazzi. Juventus striker.
About this, somebody that's not been on the shadow cabinet, they have to own.
Because they're tarnished by what's happened.
I'm in the final now. Antoniazzi and Louise Haig, they're disgusted at Barry Gardiner's entry into the Labour leadership contest. It's all good. 14 minutes past the hour. Let's talk about something a bit more serious. And I'll grow up a bit. Yeah, I will. I've always been a child. You know what it is now? It's going to get worse because I'm not drinking alcohol. And I won't say that I'm sleeping any better than I've done in the past, but I do find I have more energy. That's not a good thing. So it's going to get more childish and childlike. The monologues will anyway in the coming days, weeks and months, and maybe even years. Let's talk about something a bit more serious. Well, it's vastly more serious. The plane crash. You know that. When the Iranian government returned fire in response to the murder of General Qasem Soleimani earlier this week. They attacked a couple of bases west of Baghdad. They didn't kill anybody, allegedly. And they warned the United States, this is the way it's going to be. If you kill any of our people again, we're going to retaliate. On the day it happened, a Ukrainian 737 plane, shortly after taking off from Tehran Airport, apparently tried to turn back, got into difficulties and crashed. Now, it's only been a couple of days, but scandalously, the UK and US media are introducing the notion that missiles might have been involved. Now, I'm not saying missiles weren't involved. What do I know? But nobody knows, because it's only been 2 days. Listen to Sky News presenter Deborah... Well, she's not a presenter. She's one of Sky News's foreign... She's not foreign editor, maybe she is. I think she is. Foreign editor Deborah Haynes.
Yes, well, yesterday, very much the line that pretty much everyone was thinking was the case was that this was just a tragic incident with maybe some kind of technical failure on board the plane. But what has evolved over the past 24 hours is that now you've got the Ukrainian authorities who are opening up the possibility that it might not necessarily definitively have been that. They're saying that they are obviously investigating the cause of the crash of their airline, in Iran. And they're saying that they're looking at possibilities that, yes, maybe it was technical failure, but also maybe it was a missile strike, potentially terrorism, some kind of collision. And the reason why, obviously, that's hugely significant in the...
But that's just ridiculous, because at this stage then you could say the pilot was distracted as he saw Mary Poppins off of his starboard bow. Off the starboard side, the pilots might have seen Mary Poppins. So it might have been a missile, the plane might have gotten into difficulty, it might have been engine failure, it might have been a flock of birds, and it might have been they saw Mary Poppins gliding by with her umbrella. It's been a couple of days. It's scandalous to be introducing at this stage, when nobody has sifted through any debris yet, when they haven't yet released the flight recorder data, to be suggesting it was hit by a missile. Well, it's wretched as far as journalism goes, isn't it?
In the sense that, you know, it could be a range of different options. but also to remember when this happened, the plane came down a few hours after Iran launched that barrage of missile attacks on US bases across the border in Iraq. The Iranians have always maintained and still maintain that this was some kind of problem with the aircraft. They've had a report that's been released, an initial report into the investigation, saying that the plane did not make any radio call for help, but was in the process of turning round when it came down. So again, a suggestion that would maybe infer that there was some kind of problem on board the aircraft. But you've got Ukrainian investigators on the ground who are wanting access to the site. They're negotiating with the Iranians to get access to the site so they can begin their own work. And amongst the group that are there are individuals who were involved in the investigation into the downing of MH17, which was that aircraft that came down in Ukraine back in 2014, during the time when there was heavy fighting going on in the east of the country between the Ukrainian forces and Russia-backed rebels. And that aircraft was brought down by a surface-to-air missile. So the Ukrainians are particularly sensitive to any kind of suggestion.
Yeah, but she fails to forget about MH17. We know what happened there. She fails to point out that the Ukrainian embassy itself has said that it was engine failure or it was mechanical failure of some type. Shocking, isn't it? And if anybody fired a missile at that airplane, you'd have to stretch the imagination to limits maybe that it's never been stretched to before, to make any sort of case that the Iranians had anything to gain in doing it. Why would the Iranians do it? Why would the Iranians shoot a Ukrainian passenger airliner leaving Tehran? Why would it do that? You know, you can't make a case for it. So it's just the usual fuckery from the UK media. Lots to get into, but I've got a couple of more stories to do, but I am running out of time. But I do want to tell you that the Independent Inquiry into Child Sex Abuse, and this is an inquiry that has been going on now for some years, headed up by Alexis Jay, has said this afternoon, incredibly, that the UK authorities are failing to use powers they already have to stop sex offenders leaving this country and going abroad to abuse children. This is an amazing revelation. Not so amazing for you and me. It wouldn't surprise us. Because the higher you go in terms of the authority in this country, the more comfortable these people are with abusing children. Of that, there's no doubt. But surely the country coming to, I mean, with the Iran news, with the Sussexes news and all that garbage, maybe this will get lost in the news cycle. But you have to imagine men and women in the UK tonight must be scratching their heads. The country, the government, has the authority to impose banning orders on travel against anybody that's been convicted of sexual abuse, whether it's against women or men or against children, and they're not doing it. Only a tiny fraction of child abusers have been prevented from leaving the country. And it's believed many of them have gone abroad and abused children somewhere else. It's absolutely mind-boggling. But that story gets lost in the spin today. As I said, the royal family story and the developing story, of course, around Iran. This is Thursday's Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live. It is always live when it's on. It can be heard back on Spotify, on iTunes as well. It's on podomatic.com. That's where it's archived. Multiple platforms. Going to take a tune, a little bit of Manchester here. This is Mick Hucknall and Simply Red. Yes. When we come back, I'll be joined by none other than Robert Inlakesh. The most listened to independent radio show in Europe, the Richie Allen Radio Show, live, Salford, Greater Manchester. Multiple platforms around the world, Fab Radio 2, here in the great city, Tune In Radio, we could be here all day. Now, would you believe it? The BBC is reporting this very second. This is incredible. Listen up now. Shake the cobwebs out of your ears. United States officials are claiming in the last few minutes that they believe the Ukrainian International Airlines Boeing 737, which crashed after leaving Tehran a couple of days ago, as we've been reporting on, US officials are saying they believe that it was hit by a missile and that they believe that it was mistakenly done. This is bombshell stuff. I'm taking this, of course, with a large pinch of salt, noting the source, US officials, CBS News, saying that Iran accidentally shot down the Ukrainian plane that crashed on Wednesday. Staggering stuff, this. Let's welcome back to the programme. It's been a long time since he was on. I'm glad he's back. He's a journalist, he's a writer and political analyst. And when he's been on this programme, he's talked about the time that he has travelled in Palestine. Of course, the occupied West Bank, he's been there, he's lived there. He's a very good writer and broadcaster. These days, he's doing a lot of work for Press TV in London. Welcome back to the programme, Robert Inlakesh. Robert, what bombshell information that is coming out from the United States of America. What do you make of that?
Well, it's all part of the U.S. Propaganda machine. I mean, this strike that the United States committed before the targeted assassination of Qasem Soleimani, the lead general of the Quds Force of the IRGC, I believe is not something that was done out of the blue. That was, upon my first analysis, what I thought, and many people thought this was perhaps a stupid act by Trump that he just took in the middle of the night. But after looking into it and consulting with sources, first I was put onto it by a source of mine from the Gaza Strip, and then later consulted with others. I've come to the conclusion that this strike was in fact done strategically and out of a act of desperation from the United States and also Israel, which drives its sort of foreign policy in many respects in the region. And that what we are seeing now is Trump attempting to play off what has been done and what's happened and transpired to his own political advantage. What I mean by having a plan behind it is that the Gaza Strip is a testing ground. And this is something that people should understand for what happens in the rest of the Middle East. And in November of last year, a man by the name of Baha Abu Atta, who was a lead general of Islamic Jihad, an organization in the Gaza Strip, which resists Israel and is an armed group, he was assassinated by the Israelis, and in a high-profiled assassination, targeted assassination. And on top of that, they struck in Syria as well, attempting to target another. After this, the people of Gaza thought that this assassination would mean an all-out war between Israel and the Gaza Strip again, or another large-scale military bombardment resulting in large death and destruction. Islamic Jihad fired off and hit past Tel Aviv, and a lot of the rockets didn't do a lot as they normally don't, but some of them did relative damage to infrastructure. At the end of it, it ended, and a lot of people were let down by what happened. You have to understand that Abu Atta, who was assassinated, was a very similar guy to Qasem Soleimani in the eyes of Gaza's population. They saw him as sort of a rogue guy who was against you know, the status quo of Hamas and Islamic Jihad, which many people in Gaza aren't fully in support of. A lot of people are against them. And so he was that outside guy that was like a Qasem Soleimani. And in October of last year, before this attack, there was a list put out by the Jerusalem Post in which the Israelis listed the top three people that they wanted assassinated in the region. And they've wanted these people gone for a very long time. Number one was Abu Atta. Number two was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and also Qasem Soleimani. Two of them are now dead. I'm not saying that that report is somehow proof or evidence. However, Israel was testing what is known as the Axis of Resistance, which is attached to the Quds forces, and Iran is sort of its leader. And it was testing Islamic Jihad, which is connected to it by this targeted assassination, and a number of bombings in Syria last year, which went largely unresponded to. They were able to get away with bombing and destroying large amounts of the Syrian air defense systems, and to no response really all year last year in 2019 from the Syrians. They also were able to play off after having a short engagement with Hezbollah in Lebanon after flying loitering munitions or suicide drones into Lebanon. They were able to play off Hezbollah's response as claiming that nobody died, and Netanyahu actually gained from this. He looked very strong. After this, I believe this sort of strategy was a testing of what the what is branded as the axis of resistance would do in the event that someone high profile is targeted and killed from the Iranian side. And of course, the Israelis since 2006 have been requesting to assassinate Qasem Soleimani from the United States, but it hasn't been granted themselves.
So an experiment, Robert. So you think it was an experiment of sorts. And the Jerusalem Post article you referenced from October last year, which listed targets that the Israelis wanted to eliminate, and two of them on the list were Abu Atta and Qasem Soleimani. That article is in the public domain. I'm not doubting you at all, but I want to link to that. I want to find that article and put it out there because it is very significant if it was in the Jerusalem Post.
I can definitely provide you with that link.
No doubt.
Of course, this is not something that's provable by documents, but this is a theory that I have that is supported by a number of sources, which are telling me that this is the overarching theme. The reason they would want to assassinate Qasem Soleimani is because the sanctions were not working to weaken the resolve of the what is branded as the axis of resistance. Of course, Iran has many regional allies. This includes the Syrians. This includes Hezbollah. This includes the organizations in the Gaza Strip, Ansarullah in Yemen. Of course, factions which come out of Afghanistan and Pakistan and, of course, in Iraq.
Robert, do me a favor. Hang on, because we've got to the top of the hour, so we've got loads of time. That was a question I wanted to ask you, because you are working with Press TV in London. You have travelled extensively in the region. I wanted to ask you a little bit later on about how Iran has navigated the sanctions, because we never talk about stuff like that, and it's very important. But before we do that, thanks for the information about the Jerusalem Post listing the targets. That's very significant. I didn't know that. But I want, because it's such a massive story, I want to stay with the Ukrainian airline story. This stinks to high heaven to me, the notion that some of our listeners might say, well, it would do because I've taken the side of Iran in this dispute with the United States over the nuclear deal and all of that. I have come down heavily on the side of Iran here. But I can't imagine how you could mistakenly shoot down an airliner that leaves a big airport like the airport in Tehran. I mean, the equipment that the Iranian, I suppose, military would have, like any other military, would be very sophisticated. And it's very easy to differentiate between a passenger plane and a plane that's military or a plane that is hostile. So I can't believe for a minute that if a missile did bring the plane down, that it was by accident. What is going on here? What do you think CBS News and these so-called US officials are playing at? This is crazy to me. I know it's just breaking this story and we're kind of going on the fly here, but what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, of course, I cannot corroborate anything that I'm about to sort of say with this. I mean, I don't know who is responsible for it. I don't know if it was just a mistake. And I have really no evidence to back up any sort of claim. I think it's very mysterious that it came down at this time. I don't know who was involved in it. And I've been thinking about this all day, and it's something that's bothered me. And I assumed that they'd use this to their advantage with their propaganda. But I think it also adds in to sort of covering up what just happened.
Yeah.
The Iranians had just released today, the IRGC has came out with a report which shows the damage inflicted by their response. And of course, when that came out, they don't want this sort of thing to come out. So this is perhaps something that they've used in order to cover up. And like I was getting into, and it was sort of a long introduction into what I was saying, but with the strategy that they are employing, one, what they wanted to do is they wanted to test and see that Iran, what Iran would do in this instance. Of course, Iran has responded, but rationally. And that's what we've seen from all of these different organizations, I would argue, is that they don't go, absolutely crazy like they're portrayed as these bloodthirsty terrorists. They're a bit more controlled. And using this this jet in and its downing or its malfunction and crash, in their propaganda machine is something that's going to be used to the advantage of Trump. I can really see Trump now withdrawing from Iraq and using this whole instance as, we got the number one terrorist commander. We withdrew from Iraq. Like I said, we're going to withdraw from Iraq. It looks good on part of him. And what they want to try and do is they want to sow these seeds of sort of dissent in the minds of a lot of people who wanted to see something bigger done by Iran to avenge the death of Qasem Soleimani. That's their hope. I think Iran sees this coming, however. So we could see some sort of response from Iran to do with this. And of course, I mean, the fact that they're claiming Iran accidentally shot it down, I find that very hard to believe.
Well, the plane took off hours after the Iranian missile strikes on the bases west of Baghdad. Hours. I mean, not minutes, hours. And again, you know, you could imagine the military commanders in Tehran, they would have been saying, when General Qasem Soleimani was murdered, the Iranian military heads, captains and generals, they would have been saying, look, let's be very careful now around any response that we make. Let's make sure that we don't inadvertently hit anybody that's not hostile to us or a threat to us. They would have been absolutely on the ball there. And they would have been on the ball around Tehran airport. I'm certain of it. You know, they would have been looking out for maybe another dark actor in the region, maybe trying to stage a false flag attack. So I'm not buying that the Iranians shot the plane down accidentally or otherwise. But you've got me going here. So you're talking about a situation whereby the United States and Israel were killing people like Abu Bata and Qasem Soleimani to see what the reaction would be. Was that a win-win situation for the US and Israel? Because if Iran responded very aggressively, well, then it would have given them the pretext to launch missiles against Iran. So they can't lose. You get what I'm saying? Is that what they were trying to do? Were they trying to bait Iran into a bigger response so that they could justify an invasion of Iran?
I don't think an invasion of Iran is actually very possible. It would bring the United States really economically to its knees, and it would create a wider war in the region. Like I just listed off before, it has many allies, which in the event that this happens, a lot of them are ready for this. Their countries have been decimated by the United States and Israel and its other regional other allies and regional allies as well, and the support to different terrorist organizations, Al-Qaeda-linked organizations, Daesh. And so they're ready to go and expel the United States. I think in terms of a win-win situation, they probably were thinking to themselves after testing the grounds with Syria, what happened in the situation with Hezbollah and it escalating too much, and also with the killing of Abu Atta, they were thinking that perhaps this would be small and that Trump could win in the short term and that they could also try and sow the seeds of dissent in some Iranians and some of their alliances. But what has happened is for now they have come together. So basically there's a window of, of opportunity for the Iranians to come back from this and to respond with their proxies in order to get back at the United States and expel them from Iraq. I mean, in the short term, what we're seeing, we won't see anything, I believe, from Iran again, because Iran's game is to try and make sure that through what's happened with the Iraqi parliament and the vote to kick them out, the United States will leave Iraq. And that is a part of the aim in the region. But to make sure that they get out and they stay out and they don't have regional dominance, it's at the moment, it was a bit of a wild card to pull this move, I believe, and Iran does still have the window of opportunity. However, in terms of a war against them, I don't think that was the original plan. If they launched a war, Israel knows that it's under imminent threat.
And Saudi Arabia.
In this circumstance, what Israel, I think, will do now is we've seen their fighter jets, which regularly do this when they're about to attack, have been performing mock raids in southern Lebanon and in the Golan, which means that perhaps they are looking to strike targets in Syria. Regardless of whether they hit Iranians or not, they will claim that they did as such. And Netanyahu, who has to win an election coming up in March, will come off as if, look, he's with the United States. He's participated in somewhat in what's been happening, and he's sort of stamped down Iran. And that is what they're playing to the public, at least. In reality, the response from Iran was strategic. It was measured. It was abiding by international law. It was very measured in comparison to this illegal targeted assassination, which is an Israeli style assassination, by the way, which they provided a lot of the legal framework for, branding them a terrorist and killing them, being the judge, jury, and executioner. And they have responded by not causing the massive destruction and massive loss of life. But the United States are lying, I believe, about exactly what happened. If you look at the aerial footage and also a lot of the reports coming out,
I was just going to ask you, Robert. I was speaking to Stephen Lendman last night, and Stephen expressed a bit of, he expressed a bit of doubt that the US didn't incur any casualties at all on Wednesday. He said, "I don't believe it," and you don't either, by the sounds of it.
Personally, I don't. I mean, this is my opinion. It's not something that I can pull up, you know, a document yet. I mean, the IRTC have said and announced that they have documents which prove that there were a number of planes which came in to pick up the injured and take them to Israel, Jordan, and in Baghdad, a hospital in Baghdad. However, I don't have the reports in front of me to confirm that. But I suspect because of the strike and the precision of the strike, it is true, however, and this has to be factored into it, is that Javad Zarif, who is the foreign minister of Iran, did openly state that the Iraqi authorities were told about the incoming attack because they respect the sovereignty and they don't want to interrupt what's happening so much in Iraq with kicking the United States out. They told the Iraqi authorities what happened, and the Iraqi authorities have said that they then warned the United States, but it was very shortly before what happened. The Iranians have also said that, and this is a proven fact, that none of the missiles were shot down and they weren't intercepted by the United States defense systems, which are supposed to be, they tell us, the best on earth. They were able to hack into a lot of their technology and therefore bypass their radars and hit them directly. And the aerial footage reveals just that. I mean, the massive destruction via the aerial footage of the Ain al-Assad base shows us that not only is the United States definitely lying that it didn't lose a lot of equipment, and we can show it, it shows in the images that they lost a lot of equipment, because when you look at what happened, there's these black scorch marks when you look at these radar images, which that indicates that there was a secondary explosion. And the secondary explosion would have had to be some sort of military equipment. And we can also identify what would have been a lot of Apache attack helicopters were in these hangars, which were struck. So we do know, and we can prove through aerial footage, that definitely equipment was destroyed. I suspect that U.S. soldiers were injured and perhaps killed. I can't prove it, though, at this point.
And I know you're like me. We don't want to see anybody killed, no matter where in the world they are. Robert Inlakesh is our guest. He's been on the programme in the past. He's lived and travelled in Palestine, in the West Bank. He's a journalist, a writer, and these days is doing a lot of work with Press TV in London. I think he's very fair and balanced, I think. Some of my listeners are asking me to get stuck into you, Robert, because of your association with Press TV. But look, none of us are stupid. We know that. We know you work with Press TV. We know what your opinions are. I share a lot of them. It's very difficult for me to claim to be objective. I can't say that I am entirely objective. Before I ask you about sanctions, by the way, more news is emerging as we're speaking, or more quotes are emerging. Newsweek are quoting a senior Pentagon figure, and also an Iraqi intelligence official, wait for it, they're saying that they believe, this is an Iraqi guy and a US intelligence official from the Pentagon, they're saying they believe that the Ukrainian plane was hit by a Russian-made Tor missile. Now, this sounds like horse shit, excuse my language, because it's only been a day or two, that's all it's been. Nobody has really got to the scene yet. They were telling lies this morning about the Iranians not giving them access to the crash site. That was proven to be nonsense. They haven't had any time yet to examine anything, to take any samples, to go back to a laboratory. So I know this is nonsense, at least at this stage, this idea a Russian-made Tor missile. So now they're suggesting that the Russians shot the Ukrainian plane down, and they're even mentioning MH17 as well. Wow.
I mean, this is what they do. This is, they jump to huge conclusions, and they sort of let the cat out of the bag for anybody who has any sort of, let's say, knowledge when it comes to these sort of things, and is, you know, just the most basic of a political analyst. You can tell that when they announce things so early without anything actually coming out and confirm it and make official statements, that this is part of the propaganda machine, and it's playing into something wider. I mean, earlier I heard that from the Ukrainian side, they were claiming that it was a Russian missile. I'm not sure whether that claim is that the Russian missile was used by an Iranian system. Is it not? I'm not too sure what they're trying to say there. But I mean, it's like the United States with its announcing, and they link this to Qasem Soleimani. They'll announce things like 1,000 Iranian protesters had been killed just a few months ago. And then, like, they provide, they say, we have evidence for it, in order to demonize the government, of course, when they're getting ready to do something, and then they never come out with the evidence.
Never.
So they'll make statements like this and then not come out with the evidence.
Hey, Robert, you must have been heartened by Mike Pompeo's briefing on Tuesday or Monday, maybe it was Monday, when for the first time in a long time, print journalists really got stuck into Pompeo and asked him about the justification for killing Qasem Soleimani, saying to him, you told us on Friday after you'd carried out the killing that you had evidence that he was involved in imminent plots. Now you're telling us that it wasn't imminent. They really got stuck into him. That was a good thing, that. You know, the world has learned. And we criticised the mainstream media quite a bit on this programme. But the US press did its job, at least in that instance. They said, hang on a second, you told us this guy needed to be killed because lives were in danger imminently, and now you're saying they weren't. So that's no bad thing. I also wanted to talk about, because time flies on this programme, you mentioned sanctions. Now, when you listen to UK television and radio, they talk about sanctions crippling the Iranians. And of course, Donald Trump, the US president, mentioned the other day that he would impose even more crippling, newer sanctions on the Iranian country, the Iranian government, and that the people would suffer. Now, I believe, I've seen this in Venezuela, I've seen it in Central America, these sanctions are imposed on countries in the hope that they will cause so much economic pain to ordinary men and women that they will turn on their own government. That's what they want to do. When we hear in the UK media that sanctions imposed on Iran have crippled the country, what's the truth, Robert, as far as you understand it? Have they caused serious economic problems for ordinary Iranians?
Well, of course, the ordinary Iranians are the ones that are suffering, suffering under these sanctions. And that's the aim of it, is to, like you said, to make the ordinary people, it's never, ever the leadership or the upper class, the rich people who are getting hit the hardest by these sanctions. It's always the, you know, the ordinary people of these countries which are hit by these sanctions hard. And so, I mean, with Trump announcing new sanctions, I think this is just a publicity stunt, really. So it looks like he's done something as in response, you know, because they've sanctioned pretty much everything Iran has at this point. And I mean, they do symbolic things like sanction Ayatollah Khamenei. But like, if you're going to sanction the supreme leader, he's not really got anything to sanction. They do these symbolic things. But overall, the overarching theme is to make the people suffer, which has been happening. But it doesn't work to bring down the country's government. And it's proven. I mean, look at, for instance, the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is a great example of this. It's been besieged since 2006 by the Israelis, and they sanction everything coming in. And whenever there's an escalation of any sort whatsoever, whether it be the Great Return March or it be a few fireworks coming over or whatever it may be, they'll tighten them and they'll practice collective punishment. And then they'll say to the Palestinians in Gaza, they'll say, remove Hamas. Now, the people in Gaza don't actually like Hamas. A lot of them are opposed to it because of their own issues of how they control the place. But when it comes to that, the only thing you're going to do is strengthen the resolve of the people. A lot of people are going to get frustrated. A lot of people are going to get angry. But when it comes to a foreign power punishing you, and in the case of Iran, I mean, look at, of course, people are absolutely suffering, but they had the revolution to get rid of the foreign influence, and the foreign influence threatening to come back after sanctioning and punishing you is an insult to them and their national identity. And this is the thing the United States cannot allow, and it has not allowed. I mean, it's a continuation of the French and the British and their occupations and their colonization of the region, that they will not allow them to have any autonomy. It doesn't matter whether the Iranians actually with arms were ready to resist or not, or whether they were helping their allies who were being blown to bits all over the Middle East. It doesn't matter. Look at Venezuela. Anybody that is independent, that wants to do their own thing, wrong or right, they're going to go after them. And this is what they've done to the people of the third world. They demonize them through the newspapers. They demonize them through whether it be atrocities that occur in the world, which they pin to all these people. I mean, how long has the UK and the US and all the rest of it, how long has it been? And how long have they had troops inside of Iraq and Afghanistan? Afghanistan since 2001 and Iraq since 2003. And a lot of people won't be able to tell you that there's actually a difference on the street between an Iraqi and an Afghan. They think that they're both Arabs. And not only that, but with Iranians, we're supposed to hate Iranians. We don't know anything about Iranians. We think they're the same as Arabs. Yeah. They're a different people with a different language and a culture and a history. But we don't even know this. We're trained to hate them like we're trained to hate the Vietnamese. We're trained to hate the people of Korea, the people of Japan. Whenever it's good for them, they'll make us hate these people, they'll demonize them, and they always torture the public, the population of this country, because it's their fault for existing and voting in an independent government.
You're right, trained to fear. But you know, the sad thing, you mentioned Iraq there, 2003. It occurred to me the other day that I covered the so-called Iraq War, which is a nonsense. Of course, it wasn't a war. It was an imperialist invasion. It was mass murder. Genocide, really. We shouldn't call it a war. But I think you look at 20-somethings now, Robert, even some 30-somethings, they have no recollection of that. They have no recollection of it. They have no understanding of it. So I don't want to be depressing here, but sadly, they don't see this pattern. So guys like me, I'm 45 now. I see this pattern. I've seen it for years and years. You've described it brilliantly, how they go about it, the propaganda war followed by the invasion or by the missile strikes, by the mass murder, by the displacement of people. But sadly, you know, we're looking at a whole new generation of people now. They have no idea that the US and the UK has been in Afghanistan since 2001. They have no idea what's gone on in Iraq. They have no idea what happened in Libya a few years ago. They haven't a clue. I don't know what to say, only that for me, if I'm going to give my opinion here, it's vitally important for me, for humanity, that Syria survives and the Assad government survives, and maybe in the near future transitions to another government. That's none of my business. That's for the Syrian people. I don't see Bashar al-Assad as a demon or as the enemy either. I know a lot about him and how he came to power. So I think if Syria and Iran don't survive this, the world is doomed, right? And that might sound like a throwaway cliche or a bit of drama, a bit of melodrama, but it isn't. We're screwed if these countries don't stand up to this.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that there's a lot of tyrannical things that are going on in the world and will go on regardless of whether they stay there or not. But the fact that they're there is a shining example of there is governments in the region of their own people and ideas. And that's the important thing. Whether you disapprove of what Iran is internally or not, that's on
none of our business. None of our business, Robert.
It's none of our business over here. They have their ability to do what they want. And if they ask for outside interference, then you have maybe a say. But that's if they ask you. If they don't ask you, you have no opinion. I mean, when the British were there inside of Iran, when they were taking the oil from Iran, they had separate buses for the British. This is the history. They had separate buses in which they would say no Iranians and no dogs on the buses inside their own country. This is what we've done to them, and this is how we've demonized them. And it's through Orientalism and the way that we view these people, that we view them as lesser. Why is it that Israel can have all the nuclear weapons in the world that it wants? Iran can't have any. Why is it that the United States can conduct a targeted assassination in a foreign country thousands of miles away from its homeland, which it invaded and killed and starved the people, sanctioned 800,000 children, died in the, and invaded it, of course, and destroyed it? It can go in there and it can target somebody, a top general, one of the most beloved people inside of Iran, and then Iran can't respond? Iran is being demonized by Rab and Boris Johnson for responding, and actually a proportionate response. And, you know, this is the ideology that they put out to us, regardless of whether you don't like the way that Iran operates or whatever, you've heard about it, be a little bit more nuanced.
Absolutely, be a bit more nuanced. Absolutely, Robert. Robert, tell our listeners where they can find you. I know a lot of people who listen to this program. They do look out for and listen to and read people like yourself. For those who might be hearing you for the first time, where did it go? Because you're an incredibly interesting guy. We had a great chat in the past about your travels in Gaza and what you came to understand there while living there and reporting from there. Tell our listeners a little bit more about where they can find out more about you.
Well, I do currently work for Press TV UK, and I'll be updating there. I mean, I have well-produced content there. I have my own YouTube channel. I write articles for a number of different outlets, which you can find them. I have all my social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, etc., which people can find. I just post my articles and updates about what's going on in Palestine, and I have sources and I follow it closely there in Palestine, and updates about what's happening in Syria. And I'm primarily focused on the Middle East. However, I do comment on other things. They're the primary places I'd say that you could find what I'm doing.
It's really important that you're doing it, Robert. Thanks so much for coming on the program today. Don't wait to be asked back, by the way. Stay in touch. And as this develops this year, it'll be good to have you coming on and giving us your measured and very well-briefed analysis of these situations. I really appreciate it, Robert. Thanks. Happy New Year. I know it's late in January to be saying Happy New Year, but all the best to you and continued success to you. Thanks, Robert.
All right. Thank you.
That was Robert Inlakesh there, as you heard, working for Press TV in London. Really interesting chap is Robert. As I said, has been travelling the Middle East now for some years, lived in the occupied territories. And I like what he said there about whatever you might think about, you know, the internal politics of Iran. It's none of our business. Because I get this from people from time to time, and I always acknowledge it. You know, people say to me, oh, Richie, it's not the best place to be, Iran, for certain groups of people. And I always say, well, I'm not going to deny that if the reports are true. But what's that got to do with us? It's none of our business. We're talking here about a geopolitical issue. We're talking about countries, you know, bombing, maiming, displacing millions of people. We can talk about human rights another day. And I don't like whataboutery either. Whenever somebody from this country says to me about human rights in Iran, and I know I'm going to say but now, but, you know, I said I don't like whataboutery. But it's an interesting thing, that old saying about let him who lives in a glass house throw the first stone. I probably messed up that old adage there. But, you know, you've got people with disabilities in this country, with serious disabilities, being hounded to their deaths by a state that employs private companies to go after them to try and reduce the life-sustaining benefits that they need every month, or not just reduce them, eliminate them. That's a human rights issue. You know, let him without sin cast the first stone, as it were. Jesus, yeah. Right, we're 90 seconds to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. Max Egan should be joining us live from Oz in a few minutes' time, all going well, because it's approaching 4 a.m. in Australia there. Thanks for your comments, by the way. Lots of them came in. I've just had a big swig of water. If you want to see what other people are tweeting to me, where it says search Twitter in the top right-hand corner of your Twitter page, put Richie Allen Show, all one word. Press enter, Richie Allen Show, all one word. Press enter, and then you'll see what people have been tweeting to me. So, you can join in with them. Steve tweets, US sanctions equal economic bullying to cause civil unrest in nations to depose governments. That doesn't... Or excuse me, let me read that again, Steve. My apologies. It's difficult when you're reading on the fly, you know. I need to get reading glasses as well, by the way. I need to get reading glasses. Let me read that again. Steve tweets, US sanctions equal economic bullying to cause civil unrest in nations to depose governments the don't play the American ball game, says Steve. Thank you very much for that, Steve. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter if you want to make a comment on this issue or any other. Hi to Faisal as well. How you doing, Faisal? Faisal tweets, let's not forget that sanctions are always a gravy train for someone when a restricted market is created. That's absolutely right. Absolutely spot on. Iran, of course, does have its friends and does sell oil, despite the sanctions imposed on it by the United States. It does manage to sell oil to its allies. We know this. Hi to Busy as well. Too many comments there. Mark, too many to go through. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I won't, because I'll be here all day long. Okay, we need to get Max Egan on the line anyway. Okay, then, the last Richie Allen Live Radio Show of the week. Great to be with you. We're going off to London in a minute or so for headlines. I'm doing a lot of stuff on the fly here. Anyway, yeah, it's all happening here. It's all happening. Yes, I had a momentary malfunction there, but all is good. We're going to London for headlines. When we come back, we'll have a tune and then we'll have Max Egan. All right, headlines from London, Ollie Barrett.
From Peter Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The US says it would take part in serious negotiations with Iran to try and safeguard international peace. Iranian investigators say a plane that crashed on Wednesday was trying to return to the airport in Tehran. Britain's royal family is said to be hurt. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex have announced they'll stand down as senior royals. And another nationwide strike over pensions is underway in France, with transport particularly affected.
Cheers, Ollie Barrett. Thank you very much. Right, here's a very quick break. Back in a minute with plenty more.
Renowned healer Mark Bayerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bayerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbayerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, it's coming up for 3 minutes past the hour. Max is standing by, which is terrific. I'm looking forward to speaking with Max. While he joins us, he's coming on the line now. The Australian state of Victoria has declared a state of disaster ahead of what they forecasted to be dangerous dynamic conditions in a massive bushfire zone. Okay, this is the BBC now. Despite a national bushfire crisis raging since September, the southeastern state is only entering what is considered to be its worst fire months. They're only entering the worst of it, according to the BBC. Fires have already burnt over 1 million hectares in Victoria and claimed 3 lives. Nationally, 27 people have died. The danger is predicted to be greatest this weekend because of hot and volatile weather. Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews said today, I know we haven't seen this much fire activity this early in the season, but I make the point, I don't think we've seen as coordinated, as effective a response to that unprecedented fire as we have seen in these last few weeks. What's going on there? Well, my guest needs very little introduction, so I won't give him a big long-winded introduction. But he's made it his business over the years to look underneath, well, to look between the lines, to read between the lines, to investigate in corners that the mainstream media and mainstream journalists won't go anywhere near. And he's been following this story for weeks, if not months, and not just this year either. Let's welcome him back to the programme. Check out thecrowhouse.com. He's a broadcaster, public speaker and artist. I'm thrilled that Max Egan is on the programme for the first time in ages. Max, welcome to the show, mate. Happy New Year, and I hope you're feeling a bit better today.
Thank you, Richie. Nice to come and talk to you again, brother. Still feeling a little bit under the weather, but that's just the way it goes. It comes with the territory. Thanks for asking me on. Good to come and chat to you again.
Yeah, I'm delighted, mate. And thanks for doing it so early in the morning there. I know it's still dark there and it's in the small hours of the morning. There's so much we could...
I was already awake, actually, Richie. I got up at 1:45 this morning. I've been keeping really odd hours. I went to bed about 6 o'clock and I got up at 1:45, so I was awake anyway. It's all good.
I know you talk to various content creators and radio shows around the world, so when you do that, of course, you're going to be keeping weird and wonderful hours. Before we talk about the fires, I know you'll probably want to comment on what's... I hate to use the term breaking news because it's such mainstream media nonsense. But the United States, two reports coming out of the US in the last 25 minutes. One says the Iranians might have accidentally shot down the Ukrainian passenger jet on Wednesday. The other one says that the missile that took down the plane was a Russian-made Tor missile. This is extraordinary levels of bullshit, right?
Absolutely. I would say it's a plane crash, Richie. I doubt that the Iranians would have shot one of their own planes down, and I doubt whether it was a Russian missile. I mean, yeah, it's just rubbish. Trump trying to clutch at straws, the U.S. administration trying to clutch at straws, shift attention from what Trump just did, which was a war crime. You know, Trump just killed Soleimani, who was a general of a foreign country. I mean, he basically delegitimized every military with that move. You could say this is the same as the Germans saying General Patton was a terrorist because he invaded Germany. You know what I mean? It's crazy. It's crazy what he's done, and it's an election move. And Soleimani was the one man who stopped ISIS taking over the Middle East. We're going to see a huge resurgence in ISIS now that this man's out of the picture, which is what they want. I mean, ISIS is a mercenary army run by Israel and the United States anyway. So, yeah, it's a ridiculous claim that Iran would have shot down their own plane, but it's pretty typical of the Trump administration, I think.
It's what we'd expect. We've talked a lot about it this hour, so let's come to the fires. The last year, 2019, I spent quite a bit of time talking to people on the U.S. Pacific coast about fires and why they believe those fires were set deliberately and the agenda that they believe is unfolding as to the reasons, again, for said fires. What's happening in Australia, and I've got to say this, Max, the photographs, not photographs, but the video footage that the BBC and Sky News uses, I mean, it's startling. It's heartbreaking. I don't want to sound like I'm virtue signaling because I'm not, but it's heartbreaking to see, you know, thousands and thousands of hectares, millions of hectares of land and vegetation, countryside, bush, as you'd call it, being destroyed. You look in places that nobody else looks. That's why you've been doing what you've been doing for so many years. It's why you've been so successful at doing it. You take the floor here because it's your area of research. You've been making video. By the way, folks, I will put links out to where you can see these videos on YouTube, Max's own videos. What do you think is happening, Max? Sum it up for our listeners. What is really going on here?
Look, it's got all the hallmarks of Agenda 21. It really has. This firestorm has been created deliberately. It's been a series of events that have gone back like 20 years to get this to happen. You know, they stopped clearing the forests around about 20 years ago. It changed all the forestry rules, and it's been a gradual thing. Yeah, they do it all gradually, so you can't actually see and notice something big change happening. You know, but they introduce these laws, and it gradually gets more and more restrained, and that's the way you go. So we've had a major buildup of debris in the forests, falling branches, falling leaves. None of this stuff's been cleared. They've also, around about the same time, around about 25 years ago, they started spraying all of our skies. You know, the terrible word that people don't like to talk about, chemtrails or geoengineering, which is a very real phenomenon. People are in denial of this. I can't understand why. They think these are all contrails or jet exhausts or whatever. They cook up all sorts of reasons for them. They're even naming them as clouds now, which is ridiculous. But yeah. These long streaks across the sky. And what we're finding in the soil and the water is elevated levels of barium, strontium, and aluminium, among other things. And I've done some research into this, and I've realized that this is actually the same compounds that are used to make sparklers. It's actually a form of thermite that they're creating with this. So this is what they're spraying all over our countries. It's literally incendiary dust. Now, this stuff comes down in the rain, comes down in the dew, settles into everything, and then they just leave it there, and it never goes away. So as you've got 20 years of this buildup on the floor, when this stuff ignites, it just goes off like a Roman candle. And that's what we've got. That's why the fires are so intense here. And it's like nothing we've ever seen. I mean, we've had big fires here before. We've had bigger fires than this. We've had more land burnt than this. We've had fires here back in the 1930s and 40s, I think, where we had 200 million hectares burned. We got about 5 million at the moment. You know, so this is a lot of land that we've had burned in this country, but we've never seen a fire of the intensity that we're seeing from this. And of course, the line that they're telling you is, oh, it's climate change. That's why everything is so. But you know, as been pointed out by the fire, is you could lower the temperature 2 or 3 degrees. It's not going to make any lick of difference to these fires. It isn't climate change. It's because the place has been built up, allowed to build up for 20 years. It's been sprayed with incendiary powder. And not only that, but most of our water, this has all been sold to foreign powers. Like Canada's buying our water. China's buying our water. This is Australia. This is the driest country on earth. And these politicians are selling our water. And they've blocked off the river systems. The Murray-Darling Basin is almost dry. We've got things like Cubby Farms, which has diverted the water from two rivers in order to harvest, to grow its cotton. I mean, why are they growing cotton in Australia, such a water-hungry crop?
Yeah.
And we've got Cubby Farms, which is really like 75 kilometres across these cotton fields. Unbelievable, the size of them. It's like an inland sea, you know. And this is what's happening. So they've set all this up. And now that the fires are burning, the effort to fight the fires, I mean, they're saying an extraordinary amount of effort they're making, but they're not. I mean, they're dropping fire accelerant around the place, but not enough. They're not dumping any water off the oceans. I mean, little bits of water they're doing from a couple of planes and helicopters and things, maybe 10, you know. But there's like 50 or 60 super scoopers around the Northern Hemisphere that everyone's offered us, and the government said, oh, no, we don't need that. You know, so they're not accepting the offers of these water dumping planes, which could be very, very effective. Yeah, imagine 50 or 60 super scoopers flying over these fires. You're going to put these fires out. You know, but we're not getting any of that. And, the government, the military has been brought in, the Navy has been brought in, but their main objective is relocating people to safe areas, saving lives, they're saying. They're not really interested in fighting the fires that much. They're just interested in saving lives. And it's about relocation. It's about Agenda 21. Yeah, and, of course, they're not going to just force people to relocate. But they'll make it so bad in the country, they'll burn the whole place out. I mean, these people are going to return to their properties. It's going to be looking like a war zone. It's going to smell. It's going to stink. You're going to have blackness everywhere. It'll gradually come back. But you have a lot of people who lost their homes and lost everything and who weren't insured and all sorts of stuff in New South Wales. And get this, in New South Wales, the emergency services who fight the fire, the funding that the emergency services get comes from a tax put on insurance companies. Think about that one. So you've got so many people in New South Wales are uninsured because the premiums are so high, which means the insurance companies have got to put the premiums up, so less people insure, and that money goes to the emergency services, the tax on that. So, of course, they're depleted because no one's insuring their homes. I mean, this is a disaster created to happen. So you've got depleted emergency services and you've got a whole bunch of uninsured people when you have this fire. So a lot of these people aren't going to want to return to their homes. They're going to be relocated into town, and they're going to want to do it voluntarily because you can't just force people. You've got to make them want to do this. You've got to make them accept it. And then the people who do return to their homes, in the next couple of years, I've already seen some of the council drafts that they've put out that have been leaked to me. They're saying these are unsafe zones, they're fire zones, all sorts of stuff. So what they'll do is they'll put the rates up and all sorts of stuff. They'll rezone your area into not a rural zone, but a fire zone. And then your rates and your insurance premiums will be through the roof and you won't be able to afford to live there. So this is the way they will do it. It's a gradual thing. But this is Agenda 21 right down the line, Richie. It has all the hallmarks of it. And it's been deliberately set up and deliberately allowed to happen. And the reports we're having of arsonists and all sorts of stuff, you know, 183 arsonists arrested. Well, really, well, what are their names? What were they charged with? Where was their court cases? What was their fines? What happened to these people? Who are they? You know, you don't hear anything about it. So I think a lot of this information is simply disinformation as well. And I think the fires are being deliberately started, absolutely, but I think it's the government that's doing it. So it's a very complicated issue. I'm actually going to put out another report today to address all the claims of directed energy weapons and things that people are making as well. So
yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on. Max Egan is our guest, thecrowhouse.com. Look for Max on YouTube. this is interesting to me. Just on the whole climate change thing, there was a very interesting exchange on Tuesday between an Australian MP called Craig Kelly and Piers Morgan on ITV here in the UK, and a weather woman called Laura Tobin. And Craig Kelly did very well in handling himself. And he agrees with you. Kelly said the reason for the fires is not climate change. It's because of the detritus, the failure to clear these areas going back decades. He said this clearly. Now, he didn't go as far as you in suggesting in some way that, you know, that it was a deliberate thing, you know, to kind of create the environment for fires later on. But he did say clearly it cannot be climate change. He said CO2 doesn't start these fires.
It doesn't.
Yeah,
it doesn't. This whole thing has been completely preventable. That's the thing. It's preventable. We know how to manage the bush. We've been doing it for years, you know, and they stopped us doing that. But no one's factoring in the fact that the place has been sprayed with incendiary dust. That's what the chemtrails are doing. And look, there's reports from mainstream reports coming out now saying, oh, we're concerned about the toxic metals leaching into the Sydney water supply. And guess what the toxic metals are? Aluminium, barium, strontium, yeah. All the stuff in the chemtrails. You know, so this is it's obvious what they're doing. They're spraying the country with incendiary dust, and they've been spraying all of our countries with incendiary dust. And this dries the place out. It destroys the plant life. It kills the insects, and it makes it burn really, really well. So it works great for their climate change plan, you know?
Let me ask you this. You and I have known each other for years, so you'll know where I'm coming from. There are lots of people tuning into this program through Fab Radio in Manchester. They don't get exposed to this information. They're shocked. And they're saying to me, why aren't you shouting at Max Egan, Richie, the way you would if you worked for the BBC? Why aren't you screaming at him? Why aren't you saying to him, this can't be happening? You know, where are the whistleblowers? How can they be spraying incendiary dust over forestry and over bushland to deliberately start fires? Is the man mad? Why is he saying that? Now, there will be people saying that. They know that I'm sympathetic to what you're saying, because I believe you're on the right track, and I believe that you're what you're saying is fundamentally true. But people, they can't get their heads around it. I've just had a message from Jean Ann Crowley, who's a friend of the programme's, Irish actress, great lady, and she said, how can people not, why can't people just even ask themselves about the possibility that these fires have been set deliberately? And that's what you get from people. Rational people, or you know, they feel that they are rational people. They're nice people. They listen to this and say, this can't be happening. What this man is telling us, they can't be doing this. Driving people out of the countryside, away from the coastal zones, deliberately into the cities. They can't be doing it. Where are the whistleblowers? The Navy guys that have been called in, the Army guys, they must see that this stuff is going on. Why doesn't somebody stand up and say it? And you know what, mate, even though I'm very, obviously very much empathetic and sympathetic to your work, a part of me sometimes, I bang my head against the wall. I don't know, where are the whistleblowers? Why aren't people coming forward to say, yes, Max Egan is right, this is going on?
Well, it's all compartmentalised, Richie. I mean, we had an exercise here called Operation Diamond Storm, I think, in December, where they had military aircraft going out, dropping chaff and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Now, how do these military guys know even what they're dropping? How do they know what's put in the chaff dispensers? How do they know they're not dropping those incendiary ping pong balls? Have you seen these incendiary ping pong balls they use for creating fire breaks and stuff?
Only through you. It's only through you that I heard about them, yeah.
These are like ping pong, ping pong balls, and they're filled with stuff like Condy's crystals and potassium and stuff like this that ignites itself, and they can put a certain amount in there so it's on a timer, and they drop them quite openly. They drop them in forests to create fire breaks and stuff. Now, what you could put these balls, you could drop them, and you could have them set off with simply by raising the temperature or whatever. And we've had some incredible temperature spikes in the country as well. We've had areas in Kosciuszko, Cumbarumba, Tumbarumba, all sorts of places like this, where the temperature will be 30 degrees, 25, 30 degrees, and then it will jump up to 55 or sometimes even 63 degrees, I've registered. 63 degrees is like 120, 130 degrees Fahrenheit. This is... But just for 1 minute,
It'll jump up for 1 minute, and then a minute later it'll be back down. Now, this would ignite these type of incendiary balls if you laid them through the forest. Now, you could get military guys up there doing these exercises. They don't know what they're doing. They're just following orders. They're dropping stuff. They're told to do this, and they're rah, rah, rah. They don't know. It's all compartmentalized. But at the top of the whole thing, you've got these banking cartels who have their plan for the world. They have their map. They want their mines here. They want their gardens here. They want their people here. They want everybody controlled. They want to turn Australia into a mine is basically what they want to do. There's been huge lithium deposits discovered in Australia, and lithium is like the new gold. Everybody wants lithium for batteries. You've got to wonder why they need so much lithium and what sort of batteries are going to be used and what they're going to be powering with them. But, you know, that's what's going on here in Australia. The fires on Kangaroo Island, they've just declared that Kangaroo Island, mate, you know, it's not going to be a safe zone. You may not want to live there too much longer because obviously if these fires break out, you know, you're not going to want to be there. They're not going to build the resort. They're not going to rebuild it, they're saying, you know. So there's been huge lithium deposits discovered on Kangaroo Island. So what do people think all this is about, you know? But it's all compartmentalized, Richie. You know, and with this, you know, they'll move people into the smart cities. We've got the Clara plan, which is the high-speed rail they want to build. A lot of people are saying, and I even speculated myself, you know, the fires are along the line of the high-speed rail. But they've covered so much more. I mean, it's so much bigger than the line of the high-speed rail. The high-speed rail is just going up the East Coast, and, well, you know, virtually the whole East Coast is burning. So, well, from Victoria to New South Wales, anyway, there's not a lot of fires in Queensland. Some of the maps that are being circulated, which are showing the whole country on fire, are simply not true. People have to understand there's a certain amount of exaggeration going on from people as well. And, you know, this isn't going to burn the entire country out in one go. It isn't going to be forced relocation into cities. What they're trying to do with this is push their climate change agenda and show you what happens if you ignore climate change and to, you know, get people to want to move into the cities. So, but people have to realize how compartmentalized it is anyway. Yeah, people don't know what is going on. You know, they just know they've got to do this one particular thing, and that's what they're ordered to do. So they do it.
Manhattan like Project, Max. Sorry to interrupt you. The Manhattan Project's a great example, isn't it?
Exactly. It's like when you've got these things that they do for biological modification and the nanotech and the chemtrails and the stuff they put in the food, all this stuff. What they'll do is they'll commission universities to do a study on a certain thing, and then the university will present its findings. And they don't know that it goes up to this think tank and then it gets correlated with this other university. They did this other test and they put it all together and they work out what they want to do at the top. Because all of these people doing these particular single tests don't know about all the other people. They think it's just one little program that they're doing to educate the kids in university. So it's the same sort of thing. You know, you're working on one particular section and you don't have privy to all the other sections, especially when you're working with government, you know, top secret and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, you've got to have security clearance and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, people don't know. A lot of people in the military elite, they just don't know what they're up to. I mean, of course they don't. I mean, they've joined the military for a start, and all wars are bankers' wars. So why on earth did they join the military to begin with, you know?
Loads of questions coming in and loads of comments. Let me read a couple. Max Egan is our guest, thecrowhouse.com. You know all about Max. I don't need to tell you who he is. He's been an independent investigator, researcher and broadcaster for far longer than I have, and he's had tremendous success over the years in getting information to people that they would never get anywhere else. I have a lot of time for Max. Now, Patricia says, "Is the sad truth is Max is totally correct. I personally know alleged intelligent people who still cannot admit that chemtrails are not contrails. They don't have any explanation, though, about why did they stay so long, why the contrails stay so long and expand. Contrails should dissipate, but they don't," says Patricia. William is in Scotland. Love Max and his work. Would Max agree that the real wars today are against our own government? We'll come back to that in a minute because that's very interesting. Mark Wilde is very interested in the lithium connection. We will come back to Mark's question about wars against our own government, government's wars on people. Steve says, Australian fire set deliberately by people, not climate change. And you know, you've got me thinking there. I reported on something last year or the year before, and I know you have reported on it as well. The decommissioning of Fairbourne Village in Wales, which is the most extraordinary bit of madness that I've come across in recent times. This seaside village has been decommissioned just in case the sea levels rise high enough that they might drown the village, even though there's no real evidence that the sea levels will rise. This is crazy. And you've got me thinking, and I know you've considered this. So you said to me a few minutes ago, Max, we have fires here, we have fires there, and in Queensland, not so many fires. I wonder how much of what they are doing is designed to give them the pretext in a couple of years' time to suggest to towns, small towns, cities, small villages, communities on the edge of the countryside, on the edge of the bush, hey, by the way, we're going to decommission your village. We're going to decommission your town. Why? Why? We've lived here for years. Well, because there's a big risk that in the future, fires are going to devastate the area and we won't be able to help you out, so we're going to decommission the village. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it, Max?
Absolutely. That's what they'll do. Like I said, it won't be a gradual thing. You know, you'll find a lot of people will want to go there to start with. A whole bunch of the people who've been relocated at the moment that have been taken to safety, in inverted commas, are not going to want to return to their homes. And a lot of them aren't going to be able to because they're uninsured. And then again, that's what they'll do. In a couple of years, I'll say, oh, look, global warming, it's a fire zone. Remember what happened back in 2020. You know, we're going to have to decommission your village. Or they'll just do it with the rates. They'll raise the rates. They'll rezone it as a fire zone. And you see, simply won't be able to afford to live there. China will buy it all up at a song. Once everybody's mainly moved off the country and China's bought all the land and whatever, you'll find the river systems will mysteriously start to flow again. All the water will get released from Northern Territory. The aquifers will get pumped up again and everything will return back to normal once the country has been sold out. You know, and then they'll open a whole bunch of areas up for mining. There's been huge lithium deposits located in mountains and forest areas and national parks. Well, of course, a lot of these mountains and forest areas and national parks are just not there anymore, you know. So why not open it up for mining? You know, obviously it's not going to grow back too well because the fires have been so hot that it's literally burning the humus layer of the soil, like right back to the mineral layer in some places. So, you know, this soil is dead in a lot of these places as well. And it's killed all the microbes and the insects and all the stuff that makes the forest floor what it is. This is the really, truly devastating part about this is the microorganisms and all of the stuff that we need to have these rainforests. I mean, it isn't just trees growing and leaves falling on the ground. There's a whole bunch of workers in there that keep the place going, all the little insects and microbes. We've lost all that. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what these areas turn into and what the plans are, you know. So, but yeah, it's definitely relocation. But like I said, it's got to be a gradual thing. The people have got to want to do it. People have to ask to be slaves. They have to want their slavery and they have to willingly go into it. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Create their own prison. It's an amazing thing, isn't it? Isn't it an amazing thing? Again, I was thinking of you yesterday. I was speaking with Mark Windows yesterday and I mentioned something that was in the Telegraph. And I was thinking of you, actually. I was channeling my inner Max Egan. Greta Thunberg is in the news a lot. Staggering bit of information coming out of schools in the UK. Students, we're talking about 13, 14-year-olds, Max, are actually going to their head teachers and saying, you know what? We shouldn't do any more school trips because it's killing the planet. So let's not have that lovely little trip on the ferry to France. Let's not take the ferry to Dublin and see a bit of Ireland. Let's do none of that. And I thought to myself, it's wonderful because you've just described it. They've gotten the children to create their own prison, Max. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, that's what they do. They want people to be scared of travel. They want people to be ashamed of travel. You don't want to leave your country. You don't want to go anywhere. You don't want to fly any of those planes. Look at all the terrible trails that they leave across the sky. You're contributing to that when you take the plane, you know. So the way they did with Harry and Meghan, they said, oh, they're out there talking about climate change and yet they're flying around in these jets, so they're hypocrites, you know. It's that sort of thing, you know. And you can't tell me that wasn't done by design as well to put this type of a concept into the minds of these kids so they don't want to take the ferry, you know.
Jesus Christ, Max. 29 minutes past the hour. Max is going to stay with us till the top of the hour. MaxEganTheCrowHouse.com. It's not crazy, folks. What he's described there, Agenda 21, Agenda 30, it's in black and white if you read the documentation. They want this whole global sustainable development. Look at it. Listen to what Mark Windows told us last night. He's looked at it from the UK point of view. He's done amazing work on going through the documentation. It's all there. They want to get people into human settlement zones. Max, explain to our listeners what human settlement zones are going to look like.
Well, they're going to be smart cities, Richie. They're going to be all completely like you're seeing in China with the social crediting system in China. Mass surveillance, of course, to keep you safe from the terrorists, you know, and just everybody monitored. Cashless, this is where they want to go. They're bringing in a cash ban here in Australia. When people hear about the cash ban, they think, oh, no more cash. No, it's actually banning transactions over $10,000. Anything over $10,000 you can't pay for with cash. You've got to go through a bank. That's the way they want to do it. And that will gradually get smaller and smaller. You know, eventually it'll be $5,000, then it'll be down to $3,000, down to $1,000. Eventually there'll be no cash at all. You know, so it's a gradualist thing. But it's going to be smart cities. It's going to be ultra surveillance. It's going to be everybody monitored in everything they do. And when you look at these smart cities and you look at this LED lighting and all the stuff that they're using for it, I mean, LED lighting is very bad. And all of these things very much appear to be forms of weapon systems that they can use to basically create an electromagnetic prison if they want to.
Why is LED bad? Sorry, Max. Why is LED lighting bad? We see it everywhere now. Why do you think it's a bad thing?
Because it doesn't cover the whole spectrum of light. It gradually turns you blind because you get used to not receiving certain spectrums of light. Yeah. Look at the bland white lighting that LED is. You go into a room, put an incandescent light bulb in there and have a look at the colors in the room, and then put an LED light bulb in there and have a look at the colors in the room. You're not seeing all the spectrums of light.
Yeah.
And when you don't use something, it becomes atrophied. You don't use your legs, they become atrophied. You don't use your brain, it becomes atrophied. You don't use certain parts of your eyes, they become atrophied, and they don't see that anymore. They stop accepting that form of light. So gradually over a period of possibly two generations, you're going to have people who can't even see clearly, you know. So it's just bad for you. It's really bad for you. And all you got to do is look at the light spectrum. It's the same as what they've done with MP3s. MP3s don't contain all of the spectrum of audio. So gradually your ears become atrophied and you don't hear things. You know, you've got people walking around with these headphones on all day, listen to these MP3s all day. It's damaging their hearing because you're leaving out certain spectrums.
Yeah,
that's
are.
What they do is they narrow the bandwidth and leave out certain spectrums. I mean, we're only seeing like invisible light now. We're only seeing such a tiny section of reality now due to our pineal gland being closed. And, you know, all we see is that which is available in invisible light. So with this LED lighting, they're able to reduce that band even narrower. And that's the plan.
Hey, by the way, in the last couple of years, mostly because of the efforts of my better half, I got away from digital and went back to my youth and started buying vinyl records again. And I stopped listening to digital music. And I'm going to say this, Max is 100% right. When you listen to music from a streaming service and you've got it in your ears, or even if you've got it on a device, it's soulless. If you listen to analog music, if you listen to an old tape or an old bit of vinyl and you turn it on and you let it fill the room, I don't mean that you turn it up full up to 11, but you let it fill the room, it's a joyous thing and it works on you. I'm going to sound like David Icke now. I'm going to sound like Max Egan here. I can't believe I'm sounding like Max Egan. How dare I try to sound like Max Egan. But you know what, Max, on some sort of spiritual level, it's more uplifting. Do you know that?
Oh, it is. It is. It absolutely is. You know, when digital came out, my father, who died recently, he was like, you know, in his 80s when he died. When digital music came out and digital television came out, he couldn't watch it anymore and he couldn't listen to it anymore. He had to go and buy himself an old transistor radio, and he used to sit there with this little thing about the size of a pound of butter. And that was his music system. And this was my father. He was an audiophile. He used to get his stereos built for him. You know, he had old valve amplifiers and all sorts of stuff. He was right into it. And when it all went digital, he actually found it painful to listen to. And he couldn't listen to it anymore, and he couldn't watch the TV anymore because it hurt his eyes. So that shows that it really does make a difference.
Hey, by the way, there is a dissenting voice in the background there. I must give a mention to triggerwarning.tv, Hayden Hewitt and Graham Booz. They're live at 10 o'clock tonight on Trigger Warning. Check out triggerwarning.tv. They're on YouTube as well. So it's good to get a dissenting voice. Hayden says, on the music, it depends on the compression, not on whether it's digital or analog. That's his opinion. It's on the compression.
Well, it could be. I mean, I'm an audio engineer. I've worked with compressors a lot. You can't adjust compression ratio or threshold or anything to make it sound digital. You know, I personally think digital music sounds like glass. You can hear the layers. There's no bleed between the instruments. You can literally, it's like listening to glass. That's the way I found. When I go and listen to a band that is mixed on a digital mixer, I can hear the layers. It doesn't sound like a band. It sounds like every single element of it is individual and completely separated from the rest. And this doesn't create that ambience. And I can't do that with compression. So I think there's a little bit more to it. If you really listen to an analog mix and a digital mix, digital sounds like glass. That's the only way I can describe it. It sounds like layers of glass. It's transparent. And real music has this soul, this warmth, this ambience, this flow. It's almost like an organism, you know. You can feel it, and you don't get that with
it's
digital.
Funny.
I mean, you feel it because it's loud and it's pumping, but you don't get that flow. It's like the difference between floating in air and swimming in water. You know, you feel the water. It's kind of sensual. You know, water's very, very sensual stuff. You go swimming naked, it's a very feeling all that on your skin. It's almost like the music immerses you like that when it's analog.
By the way, Hayden came back to say that he meant the compression of the digital data, not the audio compression. He came back to clarify that. But he also said...
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it is. It's the compression. Exactly. That's why you're missing so much of the spectrum. Because of the compression of the data. Absolutely. Well, he's right in that, in the compression of the data, yeah. And that's what makes it sound like glass, because you don't have that little extra edge. If you can imagine a sound coming through, and think of it as a gradual hill with gradual slopes leading up to the high point and then gradually down. With digital, that hill's got square edges. Okay, so you've left out all of that bleed into the next hill sort of thing, if you can think of it that way, as a sine wave, you know what I mean? Get that sine wave and take those low points out and put square drops on there, and you've got digital. That's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, good stuff. He did say, finally from Hayden, he did say a valve amplifier to him sounds better, but in blind testing, how many musicians do you think can tell between a valve amp and a digital modelling amp? And he makes a very good point there. My only answer to that would be... And I've never been esoteric, I've never been spiritual, but I think I'm becoming more, maybe as I get a bit older. I do believe, and maybe it's placebo, maybe it's not, I don't know. I believe I feel better. And it's not because, you know, of nostalgia. I've ruled that. It's not nostalgia. It's not handling the vinyl. It's not. I feel better when I'm in the room sitting down listening to it. And I'm going to go one step further. I avoid, like the plague, these new vinyls, these 180 gram vinyls, these heavy records that have been remastered and remastered. I only buy, even if they're not in the best of condition, I only buy the albums that were, you know, the original albums. If I can get first pressings or second pressings, I stay away from the new 180 grams. But I'm digressing here. Hayden makes a good point, but I believe I can feel a difference. It's not placebo. I do feel a difference. I feel the music is different and it's having a different effect on me, but that's just me anyway. Are we being attacked spiritually, Max? I know it sounds like a stupid, obvious question, but some of our listeners are asking me to take the conversation in this direction. You know, what do we understand spirituality to mean? I hear people say to me all the time, Rich, I'm a very spiritual person, and I believe that that's being attacked by something externally. People talk about the pineal gland. I feel a bit more spiritual as I get older, as I just said there a second ago. Are we being attacked spiritually? And is it happening through the methodology you mentioned earlier on? Is it happening through TV programming? Is it happening to music? Jesus, I was listening to grime music this morning on BBC Radio 5. And people will say, oh, Richie, you're either old-fashioned because you're 45, or else you're racist because you don't like grime music because it's black people. I couldn't give a shit whether it's white people or black people or Asian people. But to me, it's just soulless crap. Is our spirituality or our connection with the spirit, is it under attack, Max?
Absolutely. This whole battle that we're facing is a spiritual battle, and that even comes back to the question that was asked by the previous guest about is the war we're fighting, or it's more like a war between us and the governments. Well, yeah, it is. That's what World War III is. is what I said back in my first film back in 2008, that World War III has already started. It's a war being waged against the people by the criminal cabal masquerading as the world government system, and they all work together. And it is a spiritual battle. You know, and it's the overcoming of fear. It's the installation of fear into the human psyche so that people are cowed. People are scared to stand up. They're scared to actually be themselves and to express themselves in the way they want to do. They feel this desperate need that they have to fit in with society. They have to succumb to peer group pressure. They have to get the approval of the people around them before they actually express themselves. You know, they want to express themselves, but they want to know that everybody else is going to go along with it because they don't want to be cast outside the box and become an outcast. You know, especially with the world of social media. You know, social media is destroying human communication and any connection to spirituality at all. You know, you give everybody a soapbox so nobody can get heard. That's kind of what they've done with social media, you know. So, yeah, it's absolutely a spiritual battle, Richie. I mean, the overcoming of fear, because this entire society is designed to instill fear into people. You know, and if you can overcome that, that's what it's all about. I mean, I firmly believe, you know, we tolerate evil. We do all this stuff because you know, we want to avoid death. We want to avoid the one part of life which is inevitable, which is death. You came here to die. That's a given. You know, it's what you do with the journey, what you do along the way, what you do with the information that is given to you. You know, and we will go through our whole lives tolerating wrong behavior and tolerating evil because we want to avoid that death. We want to avoid any type of confrontation. You know, well, what if that's what it's about? What if this is a soul test? What if it's about finding out how much evil you're prepared to tolerate? You know, you make a lot of money, you get really rich, climb to the top of the pile, you end up in the pearly gates, and they go, well, you did a lot of stuff, and you kind of tolerated all this stuff around you for personal gain, so you're going the other way. You know, maybe that's where the saying only the good die young come from. You know, maybe that's where the saying, you know, a rich man has as much chance of entering heaven as a camel does of fitting through the eye of a needle. You know, so maybe it's about that. Maybe this is a soul test. Maybe that's why evil exists, because it gives you the choice as to whether you will comply with it and tolerate it or not. You know, so what if it's about that? You know, I just live my life as me, and I'm not afraid to express myself. And, hey, I get things wrong sometimes. I make mistakes. I put stuff out on the radio show sometimes, and I get it completely wrong. And I have to come back the next week and say, well, I messed that up. Sorry about that. You know, but you've got to be prepared to do that. You've got to be prepared to make mistakes. That's how we learn. That's what you came here to do, make mistakes. You came here to hit your thumb with the hammer so you learn how to hammer the nail in. You know what I mean? If you never hit your thumb with a hammer to begin with, you wouldn't know how to hammer the nail. People are scared and terrified of making mistakes.
We have the right to be wrong, man.
Apparently, that's the worst thing you can possibly do. Yeah. You're a lesser person. Oh, my God, Richie, on one show, you got that sentence wrong. So that's it. We'll just throw out your entire body of work because you got one thing wrong. That's the mentality of people at the moment. And it's ridiculous, Richie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely, it's a spiritual battle.
It's what you're describing there. Yeah. We have an inherent right to be wrong, to be mistaken, to get things wrong. We also have a right to be offensive. We shouldn't be deliberately looking to offend people. We have the right to be offensive. We have the right to hurt. We have the right to injure. And by injure, I don't mean physically. But we also have the right to redemption. We have the right to say, well, I got that wrong. Thanks for putting me in the right path, or thanks for pointing out that to me. This is gone now, yeah. And we talked too many times on this program, but I suppose we have to keep coming back to it. You know, this notion that feelings trump and facts, we live in this era, that's very unspiritual, that. You know, because it's anti-communication, it's anti-relationship. You know, this thing of this narcissism on steroids, that if I believe something to be true, you know, if it comes out of my identity group, it must be true. And, you know, anybody who tells me any different is an enemy, and I should obliterate them from my lives, from my life even. That's so prescient now to be talking about that right now. And I've begun to think that that's anti-spiritual. I would have never considered it to be anti-spiritual before. I would have thought that it was a human foible, that it was a, you know, a human fallibility, a human mistake. But no, it's all the rage now. And do you know what, man? I'm going to grab that line. I'm going to grab that phrase that you said about the soapboxes and Twitter. You know, you said that Twitter has given everybody in the world a soapbox, but now nobody can be heard. Fantastic.
Well, that's why they give everybody a soapbox. That way you don't hear the people who've actually got something important to say. That's how you silence the voices, is you make everybody loud. That way you can't get your message across over the cacophony. And as you're right about people, you know, you get one point wrong and they attack you. I have so many trolls on my channel or whatever because one little issue or whatever. Lately I've had people trolling my fire videos saying, you must say this is directed energy weapons or you are the enemy.
But that's sort nonsense. How do you know? I mean, it might. I mean, listen, nobody can rule anything out. But if you don't have incontrovertible evidence to support something, historically you, Max Egan, haven't said something unless you've been able to. What I love about you, and I've always loved it, going back to when we met back in London, was you will say, well, I think this might be happening, this, and this is why I think that, but you're not going to say this is the way it is unless you've got incontrovertible evidence. You know, I've had too much of that over the years. People, you know, I had a very hostile interview some years ago with Judy Wood, who, a very smart woman, but didn't like the fact that I kept going back to her and saying, Judy, you can't prove they use directed energy weapons on the buildings in New York. Yes, it might be plausible, but stop being so dogmatic about it because it's not getting us anywhere. You've never done that, to your eternal credit, my friend. We've got to stop doing that, don't we?
You've got to encourage people to ask questions. You know, that's really what I do on the show, is I encourage people to ask questions. I spend most of the shows just simply asking questions. You know, and I have a lot of people write to me and say, oh, I think I've got the answer to that, Max. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not looking for the answer. I'm just trying to encourage you to ask the question, because real truth cannot be told. Real truth must be realized. It's like that light bulb moment that you have in your head where you got it yourself. If someone tries to tell you the truth, you're not going to believe them. You're going to argue. You're going to take an opposing position. You're going to say, oh, this can't be true, you know, because the guy's making the claim. This is, and you must believe me. You know, well, no, you suggest this is possible. And why don't we consider this? And I absolutely believe that there are directed energy weapons very likely involved in the fires here in Australia, but not in the way people are presenting. I'm seeing these pictures that people are putting out there. Oh, look, here's a red beam coming from the sky. You know, it shows a directed energy weapon. We caught it on camera. Well, hang on, listen. These are microwave weapons. And here's a tip. You can't see microwaves.
Yeah.
You don't see little laser beams cooking your food in the oven when you put it in the microwave, do you? You know, this stuff, red beams coming from the sky, this is something out of Star Wars. You don't see microwaves. If they did that, it'd be so obvious that they wouldn't be able to get away with it. You know, so they do these sorts of things, so people will say that, and then they won't look in the other direction and look at how directed energy weapons are actually used. I mean, if Judy Woods is right and there were directed energy weapons used on the Twin Towers, which could well be possible because they turned to dust, but even if that's true, and people who believe that, well, tell me, did they see any big red beams coming from the sky melting the towers down?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't. If it was a microwave weapon and a directed energy weapon, you cannot see microwaves. And people need to take that into account when they're posting all these pictures of these beams coming out of the sky and stuff and saying, oh, this is it, this is true, because all they're doing is discrediting the entire research.
Do you know what? It's a huge problem with the independent media. I've often said, and not necessarily content creators, although there is a big problem, but a lot of people who consume it, because they're so convinced of an agenda, and often they have very good reason to be convinced that an agenda is real, they often then will fit everything that they hear around that. And you've described it brilliantly, you know, saying things like, oh, you can see the beams and all that. That's a problem. People need to be a bit more savvy. They need to step back a bit. With Judy and all that, I never attacked Judy during that hostile interview on Talk Radio Europe some years ago. I gave her plenty of time, but I kept going back to the fact that she couldn't give me any incontrovertible hard evidence. And she took it to mean that I was saying that she was lying, which of course I wasn't. I was just doing my job. I said, look, you're a very, very qualified, very respected structural engineer, building. I know this. I know you've got some serious problems with the buildings. I think you're bang on. Even though I don't know anything myself, I can't imagine that fires did that. But this directed energy thing, you need to have absolute definitive proof. Show me the actual equipment. Show me the patents. And of course, at that time, she couldn't do that.
The question of this is something I'm going to do in my report today. The question of, do directed energy weapons exist?
We know
does
they do
the
now.
The Australian
yeah.
government have them. Well, yes, they do exist, and yes, the Australian government has them on their own website. You can see the contractors that built these things for them. They're very, very open about it. So, DEWs are absolutely real. There is absolutely no question about that. You know, were they used in these particular situations? Very likely. But how were they used? It wasn't big red beams coming out of the sky. It's much more subtle than that. So, you know, and even that photo, there's a couple of photos circulating of a fire truck and a red beam coming out of the sky hitting the Australian hills. Yeah. I've had this photo for about nearly probably 6 or 7 days now, and I haven't posted it anywhere because I've been trying to vet the photo. I want to know where this came from, who took it, because you're not going to be there and just suddenly snap. Oh, there's a red beam, snap. It's going to be a quick thing. You're not going to have time to snap it. So it must be a still frame from a video. So where's the video? Either that or it's just Photoshopped, you know, and I've spent like 6 or 7 days trying to vet this photo, and I've traced it back to one particular Facebook account, which is probably the most secret Facebook account I've ever seen. There's just one picture on this page. You can't send them a friend request. You can send them a message, which I've done, and they haven't responded. And as soon as I sent a message request, or my friend who was following that thread for me, I have a couple of researchers working for me. As soon as he sent that person a message request to ask about to try to validate the photograph, the post was deleted from Facebook and the photograph was deleted. Right. So that could be one of two reasons. Either it's real and they don't want to, oh shit, the government's onto me. They don't want to know that I'm the one who took it, or it's completely fake and they're scared they've been caught out. And I would suggest it's the latter because, like I said, you cannot see microwaves. They are not red beams coming from the sky.
These are, this is going to be an interesting year, isn't it, 2020? With everything that's going on with, you know, social crediting, with the increasing reliance on smart technology, with 5G being rolled out around the world and the problems with that. And for those of our listeners, and I know there are many whom are very fond of the technology, because I get listeners contact me all the time and say that they don't agree with me. They say, oh, 5G is no big deal. And I point them to the numerous, and I do this, you see, and I know you do this. This is why I love having you on. I point them to the dozens and dozens and dozens of studies and papers by genuine academics, by real university people who say that 5G is basically catastrophic. I point them to the interviews I've done with Chris Busby and others. 5G, you got all this. It's almost like there's an acceleration going on, Max, with this agenda. And for the last few minutes, if we just want to talk about that for the last few minutes, David Icke said to me at one time or another, probably when we lived together, I think he said, by the end of this decade, into the 20s, the agenda will become such, will accelerate to a degree that it won't be hidden any longer. That even the most, I don't know, stubborn, stuck in the mud person will have to say, shit, there's something going on. What do you think?
Absolutely. 2020 vision, Richie. You know, why do they call it 2020 vision? Why don't they call it 100% vision? Why do they call it, you know, 1010? Why is it 2020? Interesting concept. But that's what's happening here. The amount of people that have picked up on what I've been saying in these five videos, and I've attempted to be very, very rational with the five videos. I just want people to see the reality of what's going on, and I'm showing them the evidence. I'm showing them what the sparkler does, what the spraying is, and you know all this stuff. So, and I've had an incredible, over 15,000 subscribers to my channel in the last 28 days to my channel.
Wow, man.
And it's insane. It's just ridiculous. And I was in the supermarket the other day and I had a guy packing the shelves come up to me and say, hey, you're the guy making the fire videos on YouTube. Love your work, man. Thank you so much for bringing this information. Keep it coming. You know, so yeah, it is becoming apparent and it will become apparent because they've got it so far now that it's got to a point that if people don't realize this is a spiritual battle and step into their personal power, then the game's already won. They've already won. We're screwed, you know. But people could change this in a day. It's just they're looking for a leader. They're looking for the political movement. They're looking for the big action plan or the civil war or all this sort of stuff. They don't realize all they have to do is change their perspective, stop tolerating wrong behavior, treat the people around you as yourself, and the world will change. It's as simple as that. You know, this whole system exists because we tolerate wrong behavior and we just go along with it all and we're not prepared to actually be ourselves. And, you know, a lot of people are getting it now, Richie. And that if we were to do that, we could change the world in a day. But that's, you know, everyone looks for this movement. They look for this leader. They look for this whatever. They're not prepared to lead themselves. That's the problem.
Yeah, you change. You change. You and I spoke about this years ago. You were bang on back in the days when you were, you know, encouraging people to do things on a community level. If you do a simple thing like you do a favour for somebody in your community or look out for somebody in your community, that's how you do it. You're right, it's not going to be led by any messianic figure. It's not going to be led by a violent revolution. Yeah, non-violent civil disobedience might play a part in the future. Let's hope it does. But real change begins with changing your attitude to the people around you. I agree with you, mate. It's an energetic thing. You know, you open yourself up to people, you do some nice things for people, the goodness that creates, the energy. I used to laugh at people like this. I used to laugh at people like you years ago. I knew it all, you know, this metaphysical stuff is bullshit. But of course I knew nothing. These things are energetic. They do create great energy and they do change things. Mate, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the final word on that and then we'll wrap for today. And I do, again, want to thank you for staying. I know you were up already, but thanks for doing that. And in February, when you do have a night like this, when you've got, you know, when you're going to bed early because you're getting up for an early interview, we'll do it again because it's great because we don't get any interference. It's obviously 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning there. So the signal is beautiful. You sound fantastic. You sound like you're in the room. So if we can do that again next month at a time that suits you. I'm giving you the final word, my friend. 2 minutes and love having you on. You know that. Thanks for coming on again today.
My pleasure, Richie. Always a pleasure. I'll be in LA in February, I would say, so it'll be a good connection anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's all about our perspective, Richie, and it's all about how we apply ourselves to the people around us and apply ourselves to this situation. You know, stop doing what you're told. Ask questions. You know, the politicians are your employees. These are people we employ to manage infrastructure. They're not your rulers. You know, when they tell you to do something, people never ask why. You know, they tell you to jump and we say, oh, gee, do I have to? Okay, well, how high do you want me to jump, you know? It's crazy, you know? Like, we've got to step into ourselves, Richie. That's how to change this problem. You know, if people could simply realize that they have value, then you know, the world would change. But people think, oh, I can't do it. I'm just a little person, you know? Well, you know, all the things that we've got in the world today are due to some idea that somebody had that they put into motion and everyone else went along with it. And these ideas can be had by anybody. So people need to apply themselves to the situation because we can change this so easily if people would simply realize the power that they have within themselves. And that's been my message right since day one. You know, just encouraging people to think, encouraging people to ask why the world is the way it is and you know, how we could change it. And it's so simple. It's only this way because we just agree to go along with it and we don't know any better. You know, we believe all this rubbish we're told. We go through the education systems. We get trained to respect authority. And then we get sent out in the world. You know, our teachers become our parents. Then our boss becomes our parents. And eventually the government becomes our parents. You know, it's just a worldwide nanny state. We need to grow up. We don't need parents anymore. We need to be adults. That'll change everything.
Too right, Max. Listen, good luck on your travels to Los Angeles. We'll pick it up again then next month from there when you have time. It'll be good because it'll be in... it'll be 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning there when we're at 5 or 6 o'clock here. TheCrowHouse.com. If you look for Max Egan, that's IGAN on YouTube, The Crow House, you'll find Max's channel. I will link to it anyway. And those videos about what's been happening in Australia are there. And they're brilliantly produced by Max. They are. And this is very important in the independent media. Broadcast standards are really important. And you're on top of that as well. Mate, enjoy the rest of the day there. Thanks for coming back. As I said, Godspeed in your travels, and I can't wait to speak to you again next month. Thanks, Max.
My pleasure, Richie. Anytime, brother.
Legend, Max Egan, live on the line from his home in Oz, in Brisbane. Thanks to him for coming on. Fantastic. 2.5 minutes to the top of the air. That's it for the programme. Thanks again to Robert in Lakesh, who you can find at Press TV in London. Talked to us earlier on about the claims being made against the Iranians and the Russians over the alleged downing of the plane, which initially they said had come down because of engine failure in Iran. Thanks to Robert for that. And of course, again, to Max Egan, whom you heard live from Brisbane in the last hour or thereabouts. You have a fantastic weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. Sunday View is live at 11 o'clock UK time this coming Sunday. From the BBG, it's a bye from me. Look after yourselves and one another. I will be with you, as I said, on Sunday.